Welcome to this episode of Y-Pal's Tales from the Superyacht Laundry. This is actually a bonus episode because me and my partner Max wanted to kind of explain the origin story of how we came together, how we came together with Pearls, and then ultimately how we ended up at a podcast. So say hi, Max.
Hi, everybody.
So Max is never on this kind of end. You get to dodge the mic.
Yeah, I'm normally the one sat behind the screen, making lots of notes, writing down lots of timestamps of the episode, not in front of the camera.
You're lucky, yeah. I have to say, sometimes. I mean, the technical stress at the moment is pretty high. Again, having a mobile podcast, stressful. I feel like technology likes to work against me after the last half an hour. But we're here.
We're here.
It's working. So we're going to do some of the questions. Obviously, all of our guests, we ask very similar questions, kind of the journey. But we're going to start with how we met. So I had already been in the industry I don't know whether it was a season or maybe nearly two, when I came to Portside. But that was your beginning, wasn't it, when we met?
Yeah. I came to Portside. I timed it completely wrong. I came, like, August, September time in the hope of getting on a boat for the Caribbean season. Yeah, and you'd just finished a med season, and we ended up roomies. And that's how we met.
We did end up roomies. It was you, me, and... Eddie Paul.
Yeah.
Hi, Eddie, if you listen to this. Why on earth did you decide to start in August?
I think I just wanted to... I'd heard about yachting for a couple of years. I had a sort of family member in yachting, one of my friends from school, but I had a boyfriend at the time, so it was never the right time to go. We ended up breaking up, and I just thought, I don't want to bottle this. So, like, I'm just going to have to go, because if I don't, I know that I'll just end up staying in England. So I booked my SDCW, did my ENG1. I'd worked at Barclays Bank for 6.5 years at that point.
You worked at a bank? I don't actually know that about you.
Job. Yeah, handed my notice in and was like, that's it, I'm just going to book a one-way flight. I rented my flat out and just, yeah, was like, let's just head to Antibes. Yeah, it was the complete wrong time, especially because I had no hospitality experience. I have visible tattoos.
Visible tattoos.
Didn't have a B1, B2 visa or anything like that. So, yeah, I think I came to the crew house. I was there maybe 6 weeks, got some day work, just had the best time in the crew house. But obviously saw lots of people coming off the back of a tough med season and arriving at the crew house just absolutely knackered. I think, like, you slept for, like, a couple of days when you first arrived. And I remember looking at everyone thinking, gosh, like, I'm not sure if this is for me. It sounds pretty brutal. Obviously didn't get a job. The funds were running low. So I was like, right, let's just go home for the winter, save up a bit more money and come back in the spring.
Like, so if there's ladies listening that are thinking about joining the industry and wanted to get some ideas on what to expect, what's your first impressions of the crew house, and what would you recommend to anybody going into a crew house?
I was absolutely terrified the first... I think lots of people that I've spoken to, like, the first night, you definitely have, like, a little cry when you go to bed, just because it's quite overwhelming. Yeah, you've left home, you've booked a one-way flight, you're in a house with 18 people. I mean, luckily I knew Eddie. Eddie and I, we knew each other from back home, so I did have one familiar face. But I think it's just get chatting to people. Everybody's so nice, and you've just got to go out for some drinks, make the effort with people, and then you'll just have the best time. I think the first 24 hours are definitely overwhelming, and I think just be prepared for that, but stick with it, because being in the crew house, it's the best way to meet people, to hear about jobs. Obviously, we're big supporters of the Crew Grapevine. Jen and Jason have always been really good to us, and Jason does talks on how, you know, writing your CV and how to get into the industry. So I would highly recommend it as a place to stay.
I think as a single female as well. If you're coming out all on your own, one of the reasons I picked the Grapevine is because I was a single female and it looked legit, it looked safe. And that's why I went back. So when I'd done my first season, then went back and did another, I wanted to hang around to get some more work. Kept going back because it was just a safe, reliable place, you know. Yeah. And back when we were there, Auntie didn't look and wasn't as safe as it is now.
Well, no, obviously you've just been back there last week, whereas I haven't been there for about 6 years. But yeah, you definitely, you didn't walk home alone. You always, and that was a good thing about being with lots of people in the crew house. There was always people, like, well, the boys would walk you back and then go back out. But yeah, when I went back in the spring, quite a few people were getting mugged and stuff like that on the way back. But I think you've said it's a lot safer now. There's lots of cameras.
Loads of cameras, which
is good.
Loads and loads of cameras. So when did you, like, so you did day work?
Yep, I did day. I remember I had the worst blisters on my feet from walking from the coach station down to the crew house. And then I got some day work on a boat and they made me put these shoes on because I was cleaning the galley. And it was so painful because they were rubbing on my blisters. But that was, I mean, I've always liked cleaning, so I quite enjoyed that side of it. Especially if you're cleaning something that isn't cleaned, that's obviously a lot more satisfying than cleaning something that's already clean. Yeah, me and one of the girls, we got a job preparing a boat for, I think it was like the Cannes Boat Show or something like that. So we actually went to Italy for 2 weeks and got to stay on a boat and then sailed with the boat back to Antibes. So it was a really good way to get a feel for it. It was just the wrong time to be there.
What was the response of the industry to the visible tattoo situation?
Yeah, not good at all. Which again, I had my tattoos pre even knowing about yachting and knowing that it would be an issue. I mean, I've got one on my wrist, which is the wrist that you would pour drinks with. I've then got one on the side of my arm. So yeah, it was definitely an issue. But I think it's getting better now, but back then it really made it hard.
I think recruitment, crew agents, some of them just wouldn't even entertain you.
No.
They wouldn't even give you the time. So it doesn't matter if you've got all the hospitality experience in the world. They just wouldn't even give you the time of day, which is a bit hard. So you went home?
Yeah, I came home for the winter and then I saw Jen had advertised a position for the house manager for one of the crew houses or potentially for both. And so I thought, well, that's perfect because I loved it at the house. I don't know if I want to work on a boat because that seems pretty hard. So I could just go and just do that instead and that would be a fun thing to do. So I applied. She wasn't too sure because I was quite quiet when I stayed in the house, whether I'd be able to handle the house. But I had a couple of friends that she knew that vouched for me, so she gave me the chance. And then, yeah, in March, me and my sister and one of our school friends, we all flew out together beginning of March, we flew back to Antibes. And then, yeah, I ran. I was then Team Seaside, which has come up in quite a lot of podcasts. Are you Portside or Seaside? And obviously now they've got Oasis. Because I started off Portside, but then I was converted to Seaside. And,
Traitor.
Had the best time. Like, I can't vouch for the crew house enough. Like I've got the best memories from my time there.
I think one of the unspoken things is how you strengthen each other. You know, you felt you're all in it together. You're all looking together. You all help each other out. You know, if you were getting day work and they wanted someone else, you'd literally be on the phone to whoever's in your room. You know, it really started probably that crew feeling even before you get on board.
Well, I think lots of the, you know, the tacky phrases people are saying, it's like, it's not what you know, it's who you know, and about being in the right place at the right time. And I feel like yachting, especially back then, it was people going, oh, quick, they need someone for here, or just, yeah, phoning you up, be here now, and or just chatting to the right person without really realising it definitely opened up doors for jobs.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's fun. So how long were you doing the crew house thing before the first boat turned up?
My contract, it was a 3-month contract, and I had 2 weeks left with Jen and Jason, and Jen had someone phone her up who'd stayed with her previously. He was a butler on a boat, and he needed a third stew. So Jen very kindly was like, well, my manager's about to leave. She's really good, but she does have visible tattoos. And he was like, that's fine. Like, if you vouch for her, I want to meet her. I think that was Wednesday. The Thursday I met him, had my interview. The Friday he offered me the job, but I had to start on the Sunday and I still had 2 weeks left at the house. So Jen was like, give me a bit of time to just think and I'll let you know tomorrow. And then, yeah, the next day she was like, look, I want you to take it because of your tattoos. I don't want to stop you because it then might be a long time until you find another job. So I worked that whole weekend so that the manager of the other house could have it off because she was obviously going to have to carry the load when I was gone. Worked all weekend, and then the Sunday, Jen dropped me down to the boat, and the Monday we set sail for Rome, and I think the Wednesday we picked up guests. Woo-hoo. So it was like 3 busy months at the crew house, and then straight into three months back-to-back for my first season. So yeah, it was thrown in the deep end for sure.
How do you, when looking back, how did you feel, what were your first impressions actually being on board?
I remember when they took me down to the cabin, it was only a 45 metre, and they sort of opened the door, and the door pretty much touched the bed, like the bunk beds, and it was like, Jesus, okay, this is snug, and like the bottom bunk, which was my bunk, the top bunk sort of came halfway over the top of it, so you were just wedged in like this coffin, so that was a bit of a shock to the system. But yeah, it's just getting your bearings, isn't it? How to get around the boat, where everything is. Yeah, we had a couple of days to get it ready and then, yeah, straight into a trip. It was learning everyone's names as well. At least in the crew house, it's bit by bit. But when you're getting thrown onto a boat, you've got all these faces. Lots of them were names that I've never heard before. And I find it quite hard to remember a name if I can't associate it with something. So I remember I was like desperately trying to learn everyone's name so I wouldn't get it wrong.
You landed on your feet with your boat, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked for the same family my whole yachting career.
That's quite unusual.
Yeah, we had a lovely captain. I mean, I left 6 years ago now, 6.5 years maybe. I still email my captain sometimes and like check in with him, still speak to some of the crew. If I message my old boss, he would reply. Like, I got very, very lucky with them. So yeah, I stayed with them the whole time.
That's really nice. After all of that hard work and like uncertainty, to actually get a really nice like boat and owner.
Yeah, we were busy. You know, we worked long hours and every day, but I think as long as you've got a good crew around you and a good, I always said you need 2 out of the 3, either good captain, good crew, good owners, and then you can survive anything. And we had such a good crew. Like, we did 3 months, no day off, and like the last day when the guests left, we were just like, you know, quickly unmaking the beds, and we were all just laughing and chasing each other around and being silly. And I think after 3 months, to be able to be like that together is really special, because we were just, I remember like my face looked different. I couldn't get my rings on my fingers. My hands were so swollen. I had bruises down my arms from like taking everything out of the washing machine and throwing it into the tumble dryer. Like, I just looked like a different person. I had bad roots. But yeah, we were such a good bunch. I'm really grateful for that.
So, what would you say was, you know, obviously you're kind of lucky in a lot of respects. Obviously, I know the reason why you left, but before we talk about why you left, were you thinking about exiting? How long did you think that you might be in the industry? Do you remember?
It's so hard to leave, isn't it? Because it's really tricky to know what you want to do next. I took a winter off. I just needed a bit of time, and like the boss understood that I needed a bit of time. I went to Bali, I did my yoga teacher training, And I was like, you know, this is it. That's it now. I'm done. And then I think it was when I was in Bali, my boss messaged me and he was like, we miss you. You're going to come back. And you think, oh, I've just spent all this money. I've had 6 months off. And no, I could just go back for one more season and top that money up. So yeah, I messaged back and said like, okay, I'll come back. And then I think I went back March, April time. I went back to the boat, yeah, and it was meant to just be, let's just go top up the funds. And then a couple of months later, I found myself pregnant. So yeah, thanks for that, going back to work. That changed my direction of life somewhat. So I then stayed working until the October, till I was 20 weeks pregnant. I helped out in one of their properties as well. So I sort of went between the boat and their properties. So we shut the house down for the winter and then it was like, okay, it's time. I'm forced to come home now.
Was it tiring? What would you like doing then?
Not too bad. I was very fortunate. I wasn't sick. I probably had a week or two where I felt quite tired, but no, I had a very good pregnancy. I was very lucky. So yeah, I felt okay to be, and they were very good. Like, he wouldn't, you know, don't carry anything heavy and don't do this. And yeah, they were really respectful of my situation.
How did you feel? Because obviously boats, there's no maternity.
Mm.
You know, how did that make you feel, knowing that financially you're probably going to have to find something to pay the bills pretty quick?
I was always pretty good with, I'm a saver. My sister, who you know well, is a spender.
No, literally polar opposite.
Yeah, whereas I've always been a saver. So I had savings. Like, me and my sister had a house together that we'd bought. So I wasn't too worried. And my boss had said that I could always come back after I'd had the baby and we could figure something out. So, yeah, I wasn't too worried.
And you went back?
I did.
Went back with a baby.
I went back alone with a 5-month-old baby. Again, it's crazy. I had Arlo in the March. My boss messaged me in the June and was like, how are you getting on? We miss you. Do you want to come back to the house? They would do the house, say, April, May, June, boat July, August, and then back to the house for September and October. So he was like, why don't you just come for a month and just see how you get on. I was still breastfeeding Arlo at this point, single mum, so I didn't have any help. So I thought, okay, well, he understood that, so I thought I'd give it a try. So yeah, me and Arlo, he was 5 months old, we flew to America, which legally I probably wasn't allowed to do, but we won't go into detail about that. And I ended up staying for nearly 8 weeks because I did the first three and then he was like, do you just want to stay a little bit longer? And it had been fine, to be fair. They were really understanding of, you know, I needed to go feed Arlo and put him to bed and I had my little sling, and if I had to have Arlo in the sling whilst we were washing up and putting dishes away or taking them drinks. He was a very easy baby as well. He wasn't a crier. So yeah. You just make it work, don't you? We've said in previous, you know, obviously when I listened to previous episodes, as a stew, you're just so resilient and you're so used to just go, go, go until everything's done. And then even then you struggle to sit and rest. So I think for me, it was just, well, it was money. And then the plan was to go home for the winter and go back the following spring. But then COVID hit. So then the plan changed.
You don't want to be over there and...
Well, you couldn't get into America. Everything was shut by that point.
So things had changed. What job opportunities do you think? Did you see, obviously, you've got a kid, you know, you're at home now. Was there anything that you thought, maybe I could do that on land?
I think the main job is housekeeper, isn't it? Which is what I went on to do. I took the summer off because of COVID. And then I think the October, I'd seen a couple of jobs advertised. We've got some quite big houses in the area. Obviously not where I live, but 10, 15 minutes drive from me.
Sandbanks, anybody
been
there?
If you've heard of Sandbanks, there's some nice big houses there. So I'd seen a couple of housekeeper jobs and I'd applied for one. And it was with the agency in London, but they just didn't get it. When I said, like, I've worked on the super yachts, the guy just didn't understand. And then they put up another job, and luckily I got through to a different agent that worked for them who did understand what it meant to have worked on the super yachts. So I got an interview with a lovely family, and again, for them, because I'd had that experience, a lovely Swiss lady. She understood that it meant that she had very high standards, and she knew that from my background that I would as well. Yeah, and I worked for them for 3 years, nearly 3 years.
Is there a difference between work? What's the main differences when you're working on land in kind of similar role to what it was on board?
Well, obviously, I didn't have the service side of it. It was just the housekeeping, and you're on your own. Whereas at least on the boat, you know, I worked on a 45-metre and then they had a 63-metre, but I always sort of jumped between mainly housekeeping, but if they needed help with service or if they needed help in the pantry, I was sort of the one that was just wherever I needed to be. And that's just a very social environment. Yeah. And obviously, when you're just housekeeper on your own, it's not like that. And that's when I'd always liked my podcast, but that's when I really fell in love with podcasts, because I could just put one phone in and just 5 hours a day could just listen to podcasts.
That's a commitment to podcasts.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to ask this, what weird things do you do because you worked on the super yacht? So, like, for argument's sake, I've mentioned this before, I'm a weirdo, I iron still. And I'm not being paid, I just iron our own stuff. I can't cope. I can't get into a bed without it.
See, I don't. And I loved being in the laundry. I loved ironing, but I don't iron now. For me, it's how you fold the laundry. It's silly things like my brother and his now wife lived with me and my sister for a bit, and like folding his boxes, you know, when you're like putting the washing away, and he'd be like, what the bloody hell is this? How do I get into my boxes? Because you just want everything lined up and looking nice, don't you? And I think it's just how you fold your towels and your blankets and
towels.
Yeah, it's stuff like that for me. And just having everything lined up in your cupboards and handles facing the right way. And
I have to. It stresses me out. Like, I have, you know, it's got better, but in the beginning it kind of sometimes added to my anxiety if I knew that there were jobs in the house that needed to be done and I hadn't got round to them. I couldn't relax until they were done. But I had, you know, had to let go of some of it, because otherwise, you know, your home is never going to be...
No.
You're never going to be that clean environment ever.
No.
Again.
Well, it's only you on your own cleaning, isn't it? On the boat, there's a few of you.
To bring back the girls. So, obviously, we knew each other from before.
Yeah.
I didn't see you again. I think I saw you when I came to see your sister.
Yeah.
A couple of times. So we've kind of always been in each other's spheres.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when did you hear about Pearls?
Well, obviously, I came to the very first event at the Limewood. So I think my sister had come to see you, and then she'd come home and said to me that you were organising this event, and could she pass on my email so you could send me the details for it? So obviously I said yes, and we're back at the Limewood today.
Yes, we're back here, where it all began. You were actually interviewed in this room as well.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, there's a video of me. But yeah, that was when, obviously, we came here and there were 16 of us.
Yeah.
Is it 16?
How did you think the lunch went?
Yeah, really good. I think we all know it's the hardest thing when you leave yachting is the connections that you have with people and people understanding what you do or what you've done and what your life experience has been for the last however many years. And you can sound like a dick when you're talking to people that don't understand, like, oh, well, I was here and we did this and the boss did that, and everyone's just sort of looking at you like, what are you talking about? And as we've said it a lot, and other guests have said it on the podcast, you have to sort of stop that part of you and stop those conversations to sort of fit back into life at home. And I'm very fortunate that my sister, she's still on the boats. Obviously, our friend Lauren, she worked on the boat. So I do actually have a couple of really key people that I speak to most days that are understand. But I think for people that don't have that, it's really hard. So I think having the lunch, just being in a room full of women that most of us didn't know each other, but you just automatically get on because there's just a level of understanding there. There's just something that bonds you.
It's the common experience.
Yeah.
But obviously with the job itself, it's quite a close job. Mm. So, and we used to, because you can jump on a boat and you'll be with new crew, you kind of know how to just get on.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in the room on that day, that's what, you know, that was one of the things that I appreciated the most.
Yeah.
That was the first time since leaving Yachting that I actually felt the most comfortable to be me, to say whatever I wanted to say. Mm. No judgment, no kind of faces kind of like, what do you mean you were, you know, with Monica or what? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You can just be your authentic self.
Yeah, just chat freely. And it was really nice. Really nice day.
So after the Limewood, obviously I went off to do different events, kind of trying to make it work. Did you watch? Were you continuing to watch? Or did you just...
Yeah, I had you obviously on socials, and I know because Alex came to... I know she was very late, but she came to the event at the Shard. The only reason I couldn't come is because I couldn't get a babysitter. Like, here was fine because... Like, I'm from Poole, so I didn't have to get Arlo looked after for too long, but I just couldn't make it as far as London. Otherwise, I would have done. But, yeah, obviously, Alex went to that event and said how good it was. So, yeah, definitely sort of could see what was going on. I think for me, when I left, I sort of kind of forgot about yachting a bit. Maybe I was so consumed with being a mum and just trying to work and stuff like that. You sort of forget about it, but it's nice... It's nice when you're then brought back into it because it just does remind you of such a great time.
I think some individuals, you know, I've spoken to and interviewed, they quite like to distance themselves from it. Mm. You know, because they're really trying hard not to do the yo-yo, and they're really trying to push hard to kind of make it out of the industry, that they need a period of time to just
forget,
not be in touch. Hopefully that will change, that you don't need to do that. Because there is, so the first event that you, the next event you came to was Southampton.
Yeah, so that was just over a year ago, because that was March last year.
So obviously this is really the true start of the journey with us being a team. So I was obviously following you on socials, and you and your friend Lauren were going to start doing social media and with Pearls, because it turns into such a huge project. I'm like, 100% I need to work with you because you can understand, because I had people help supporting with social media, but because you have been in it, you know all of the different companies that we need to kind of, you know, share, repost and stuff like that. So it was very attractive. I remember coming to meet you and Lauren at Lauren's house, and I had all these bits of paper and I put it all over.
stuck it
on the French doors to try and explain what I was going to do next, because that's when I was like, I want to do an app. Because we'd started, you know, since the beginning, I'd started to collect a lot of information and I just didn't know how to make it accessible to these women in the industry. You know, we had lots of different information from mental health to finances, motherhood, all sorts of things. I'm like, how do you make it accessible? Mm-hmm. And I'd found a software package that could help me do that. But the first time I actually said it, talked about this software package to everybody else was like, you. That's why I had all the bits of paper and I'm like, right, we were literally trying to map out what we had,
sections.
And you know, and also expanding on how we could help, you know, which areas, you know, we could expand on. Did it actually make sense on the day? You're like, what is she doing?
No, I got it. Like you say, it's so, there's so much different things that would help you so much to know about, like different pieces of advice and information. A bit like when you have that talk at the crew house with Jason, and he, you know, he points you in these directions of stuff to think about and stuff to do. And there's just so much to be covered. And like you say, it's where do you put that information for people to find? So yeah, I thought the app was a great place to put it.
So I told you about the app. You were coming on board. We were building up to the launch. And we did the Southampton event. But the Southampton event was your first experience of what Pearls was kind of really turning into.
Yeah.
How did you find it?
Well, obviously, I think the guest speakers that you had that day were so, so good. Sarah Duncan was there, and for me, she was just inspirational because she was a single mum, was in a very similar situation to I was, and she's just gone on to create all these incredible businesses and give her daughter this incredible life. For me, sitting there listening to her was just like, wow, gosh, look what she's done. You know, Caroline Blatter was there and she had a really heartwarming story and talking about her husband. And it was just the best day. And I just think when we left, you just felt like you were walking on the clouds because you were just so energized and so inspired from these stories. And there was how many people in the room? 60. Yeah, 60, again, women. The majority who we didn't know, but again, just automatically were sort of chatting to, making friends with, swapping numbers, swapping social media handles, and just left feeling amazing. And I think that's been our biggest talking point since, is how to bottle the energy from that room, because everybody feels it that's there, but instead of it being 60 people, it's like, how do you get that out to the wider audience?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't have a clue. So, you know, my stepping stones were right, we're going to have an app so we can have, you know, all of the recordings for the guest speakers is in the app, as well as different resources from like the multiple contributors that we've got. But again, you're limited, like, obviously, you know, everybody in the room had a great time, as always. You know, they felt that connection, they felt that empowerment, you know, they were inspired. But it's, you know, I thought the app would be the next stepping stone. And it did, you know, obviously we expanded, you know, we got new members on board. But it was also how to keep that momentum up and how to reach them.
Yeah.
Because it's really difficult, you know, what, you know, I never thought that I would run anything like this. And our only avenue to reach our audience is through social media.
Yeah.
And I'm not a social media person. I'm probably one of those voyeurs. I look at other people's stuff.
Watch.
I'm not a poster, you know. Yeah. I've never been that confident in front of the camera. Basically because there's something that happens to my face. Whenever I go in front of the camera, I just don't know.
I don't know how people make it so natural and look just effortless, because I remember once you asked me to do a recording to put on Instagram, and my God, it was I had such bad hay fever, I had like a gammy eye, had my little ring light with my camera, my little boy was stood behind it, and I'm trying to, hi everyone. I just came across and I was so, I had no expression, I sounded super monotone, and you know, and you're like, bloody hell, this is really difficult. So yeah, that's why I quite like being behind the camera on these sorts of things. But it's really hard. People don't want to just read a post. Like, people want to see you and understand who you are as a person and get to know you and like you. It's a lot harder than I think people realise.
It's, you know, I suppose in some respects it should be easier. As a Pearls as an entity, we know what our purpose is. We know what we want to try and achieve. How to articulate that has always probably been my difficulty.
Yeah.
So obviously we did the Southampton event. We were all guns blazing. It looked pretty good. Then things kind of started to slow down and for some reason I decided to do our most ambitious project ever. So I decided we were going to do 2 days in Antibes at the Antibes Yacht Club. Which, in hindsight, I probably should have stuck to a day. But the event itself, so the ladies in the room, we did what we normally do. So they all had a fantastic time and we extended the programme and it was amazing. But anything that could go wrong with that event went wrong.
Mm.
Every single thing, logistically, that could go wrong, did go wrong. And by far my worst event to organise. It was just hell on earth. You know, it was literally the sheer willpower of community from Pearls of Wisdom that we actually managed to pull that off.
Yeah.
that was the true support of some incredible people. You know, Jess Dunnett, Onshore Sellers, Anushka, who did insane food. Obviously, Luxury Hospitality were there. We were doing the program. We had incredible speakers again, and we really started to really see where, for me, I started to see where we could go with it and how we could help spearhead change. But it was so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't help, you know, for anybody who was around in France the back end of last year, bed bugs. I went out a bit early. I stayed in a hotel and I literally got bitten from waist to like chin. Mm. And then I had a massive allergic reaction. And I've got a photographer and a videographer. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if I try to look good for the camera, the world is against me.
Yeah. Yeah.
The world is against me. So when I came back from that one, and obviously working together, I wasn't in a good place.
No, I think you were very deflated. Let's say it taken a lot of time, effort, energy.
Money. It took all of our reserve money.
Yeah, to make it happen. And then when you came back, yeah, you were just exhausted. And I think you went on holiday.
In the October.
Yeah, you went away just to sort of have a family holiday, spend some time with your daughter, rest, regroup. But yeah, there was definitely a big lull then. And it's hard for us because there's only so much we can put the information out there, we can put the information in the app, but we need people to be communicating within the app because that will then snowball and encourage the next person to get involved and the next person to put something. And I think, yeah, it all just sort of went very quiet, which made it hard for us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that, how do you relay the message, you know? And I think that's what I needed to do. And also, you know, it's got to pay for itself. You know, when that, my, like, cushion disappeared, I was pretty low. I got really sick just before Christmas as well. It was, you know, I was really stuck. I just didn't really know how to fix it. And then, obviously, having to kind of put, obviously, at that point, obviously, you're paying you for your time to be involved. And I just remember saying, oh, I'm going to have to tell them that I can't afford it. Mm. Like, it's all gone, kind of thing. And that's possibly one of the worst days. Because at that point, I'm like, I don't know whether this project could keep going.
Yeah.
But you had an idea. So I'm just feeling sorry for myself, you know.
You were poorly, you were in a lot of pain.
I don't know what to do.
I know. Well, like I said earlier, I love my podcasts. I've listened to them for about 8-9 years, I would say. And I listen to some silly ones to just tune out and just laugh. And then I listen to some educational ones. And I listen to Stephen Bartlett, which I know lots of people listen to him. And then, I don't know why, I just started pinging you stuff on Instagram to be like, we could do this. We could have a podcast. This would be a good idea. And I would say I did that for about a month or maybe 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And you just weren't feeling it at all. And then, yeah, after a while.
Because I'm an audiobook. I've got, you know, generally two audiobooks going on. One educational and one, like, generally a story. So I'd not done podcasts.
You know,
I'd kind of heard of them, but it was just not really my thing. So obviously when you started saying about it, I'm like, yeah, obviously I was off my face on painkillers, so you know, get me to do anything was pretty pretty difficult. But when I started looking into it, and I think it, like, the Stephen Bartlett episode, that really got my attention. So I'm quite, I don't know, anybody who's met me, I'm quite an intense person, probably sometimes a bit deep thinker.
Yeah.
And it literally got my attention.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the subjects and the people that he gets on are insanely intense. And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It does make sense.
Well done, you. No, it did, you know, obviously I was, not that I was reticent, I just, you know, it just took me a while to come around to it. But how do you, without being in the room and getting ladies to an event, because they might not be able to, because we can only do one at a time, how do you introduce them to us and what we were doing and why we wanted to do it and why we wanted to tell these stories? And it, you know, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
It was just, it was impossible on Instagram to share the amazing stories and the information and all the amazing connections you've got. You can't share that in an Instagram post. Like, we tried, and it's just absolutely impossible. And that's why I thought, well, the podcast, great. Like, you've got so many amazing connections. And when we actually sat down and, like, started writing a list of all the guests that we could just think of off the top of our heads to record for a podcast episode, we had about 50, like, straight away, 50 amazing women that are either on board or left, started their own businesses in all different subjects that we could record with. And that's, you know, there'd be loads of other women out there that we don't even know about yet that, you know, hopefully people will message us and say, girls, like, you need to get this, you need to reach out to this lady. She would be amazing for the podcast. Like, that's obviously what we're hoping will start happening, the more episodes that we put out. Because we want to share the stories. We want women to be able to listen. Because something will resonate in every episode.
Every single episode. Wherever you are at. Wherever you are at. So if you're a lady that's off and you're listening, every single episode. I mean, in some respects, I kind of need to pinch myself because I'm just basically going around and talking to all the amazing women that I know.
Yeah.
And we're actually taking the time to get... It is like you come to an event... And you sit next, we sit next to each other.
Yeah.
And we just have a chat. And that's what the podcasts feel like.
Yeah.
You could quite easily meet them at Drinkers, have a drink with them, and you'll know them.
Yeah.
You know, that feeling in the room. And I hope the listeners feel that. But also, when we're talking about challenging situations, they'll realise that what they're thinking is not... They're not alone. You know, I think that's one of the main things about it. You know, these challenges that come up, they're common and they're commonly resolved.
And also, you know, in turn, we hope that will then link into the app so that, because within the app, you can basically see who's close to you, who's nearby, or you can put a post out, you know, you're a green stew. Hey, ladies, just arrived to Antibes, feeling a bit overwhelmed. Is anyone around for a coffee? And, like, that's the big vision, isn't it, for us, to then someone to be like, yeah, that's absolutely fine, like, you know, and just get people meeting up with each other, get people talking about what they're struggling with, if they need advice, you know, who's the best person to put them in touch with to talk through something that they're going through.
I think that's the essence of Pearls of Wisdom. The Pearls of Wisdom is ex-crew members passing the wisdom back, so you're still supported by... experienced women, even though they're not on board next to you, because that's the idea, you know, that you learn from them still, even though they're not on board, so you don't make the same mistakes that they've made, or you can navigate difficult situations because they can help you do that. I mean, the app is quite incredible. So when you do decide to leave and say, for instance, you want to live in Palma, the app will tell you who's near you, so you can reach out. So you're not alone straight out the gate living, trying to create this new life. You will be able to find Yotties. I mean, the beauty of it, it will work all over the world. So if you decide to go live in Australia, you know, you'll all be able to find each other. So when you do step off, it's going to be a bit easier because you should be able to connect with women that are already, you know, could be in your area.
Which is what people want, like, even, like, from you being in Palma, like, you've got the Yotties Run Wild, and, like, their Instagram's amazing, and you see the amount of girls that get together on a Wednesday, they go for a run, and, you know, it's now spread to Antibes, and it's, like, that's just what we want. We just want lots of little hubs in all the key places where you can meet up so you're not on your own, and if, yeah, you can talk through anything that you need to. Because it can be really isolating for some people.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're going through a lot. You're re-navigating and trying to tune into who you are authentically after the yachting industry to then reinvent yourself again as a new person on land. And I think one should... My aim is that Pearls will help you use all of the strength that you've developed in the industry to then change it into, you know, perfect support afterwards.
Well, you change. I changed so much as a person, just in my likes, my interests, how I wanted to live my life, from pre-yachting to after yachting, it was so, so different. And as we know, like lots of the women that have left, it's because they're having children, and that can be super isolating. So again, if you can realize that there's another, you know, ex-yachtie in your area that's had a baby and you guys can meet up, it's just, as we know, like the friendships are just effortless because of the shared experience. Yep. We have our Thursday night live, which, you know, we're going to try and do every other Thursday again. And you know, we've made friends on the live. Yep. You know, Sierra, who we love, she's in America.
We've never
met her in person, but we see her on the screen and it's like an old friend, isn't it? And I think that's the really nice thing about it. You meet all these women that you never would have met otherwise.
But also, you can just tune in. If you are going in, you know, you're going through a rough time and you just want to have an opportunity to be around women that, you know, aren't immediately available physically, you know, it is just a nice community.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we have a specific thing to talk about, sometimes it's just how you're actually doing. So we're coming to the end. I think it would be really good, so if we both talk about where we see pearls in 5 years. Okay. What's yours and what's mine?
Okay, you go first.
Me first?
Yeah.
In 5 years' time, the podcast is reaching as many girls in the industry as possible, because I know that it will be valuable. In 5 years, I would have written a book to exit, you know, a guide to exit the industry and what you need to look out for. We'd be connected to more experts. I'm really honing in on promoting ex-crew ashore.
Yeah.
Or helping them in their entrepreneurial endeavours, because loads of them are entrepreneurs. And that we as a team get to go around individuals, because at the moment there's been a lot of solo activity. But that would be, 5 years, I would be well chuffed with that.
Yeah. Yeah, very similar for me. I think, obviously, I'm, you know, learning how to edit podcasts currently, so guys, bear with me. Hopefully the episodes sound all right.
Self-taught.
So hopefully in 5 years' time, I'm some, like, rock star pod producer giving Stephen Bartlett's team a run for their money. No, I'm joking. Yeah, just to be able to convey the messages from each episode in the best way possible.
Yep.
I think I'd also love if we had a little spin-off 20 minutes episode each week with the crazy story, you know, some being the crazy silly stories of the things we've experienced, some being questions from people and advice, and even if that's us just signpointing them to the right people to be talking to, and just the community in the app to grow, and to see pictures of girls tagging us on Insta, like, you know, hashtag pearls girls, and they're out having coffee somewhere, or they're doing this together, or they've gone out for dinner, or mums with their kids together. Yeah. To just see that, I don't want anyone to feel alone, and I don't want anyone to not know how to deal with the situation and not know who to reach out to for help. So I think if we can make sure that's really clear for women where to go, I think for both of us, that's the most important thing with pearls, is to make sure that happens.
Yeah.
And just to be introduced, you know, in 5 years' time, there's going to be women that are on the boats currently in the laundry, like we were, that in 5 years' time will have quit and started their own business, and we can hear their stories, which will help the next lot of women.
And connect them with people that can help them. Yeah, 5 years, we can do that.
We can
do it. No problem.
That's doable, right?
It's doable, 100% doable. Right, so to finish, crazy stories.
Are you doing one as well?
I could start if you want. My crazy story is McDonald's made me do it. That's what the title is. So basically, first boat, dodgy Russian. But, you know, I joined a crew and, everything was great, loved it. Then all of a sudden, the captain decided that he was off. So we got a new captain. And then we got it's really technically Dave's fault, the chef, why I got fired. I'm going to blame him. Because his food was incredible. Like, one of the best chefs that I've worked with on board. He was incredible. But when the captain quit, he quit. Because obviously those guys had been in the game for a long time. This was my first boat, and they'd seen the warning signs that this probably wasn't going to be a great season. But obviously it's my first boat, I can't do anything. So anyway, yeah, it turned into a bit of a nightmare. Our owner never got off, so he got on and he didn't get off. So like, we're 2.5 months in, and basically he'd say some friends would come, and then they would, you know, they would get off, and then new friends would come. So obviously turn around while doing, like, so the whole crew were exhausted. And the new chef, bless him, if I'd started with him and not had Dave, I think it probably would have been okay. But obviously the more tired we got, the crew menu kind of just got worse and worse and worse. We ended up having a lot of pasta, which when you're trying to keep your energy up, it's not great. So anyway, there's other things going on, and we're exhausted. You know, everybody's getting a bit narky. So the chief steward and the chef went off to provision. They said there'd be a few hours, right? 6.5 hours later, and they're still not back. And obviously the boss had come back from his day trip, so obviously I was trying to step up. And obviously I was quite stressed because I'd not done any of this stuff before. Anyway, the chief steward and the chef came back, and the chef brought McDonald's. Okay, so he put down a whole, you know, 4 bags of McDonald's for us as crew food, and it was freezing cold.
Oh.
And I just exploded. Like, I felt like I put out a massive apology to all of the crew members, because I was tired, I was narky, stressed, and I didn't like McDonald's at the best of times, you know, even when it was hot, let alone when it was cold. And I just exploded. Like, I literally remember going to the crew mess table and going, what the fuck is that? You know, I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning. I've done everything today, and that's all you've got to offer me. I just went mad. And then, like, I remember the engineer going, well, you know, like, they're under the pressure too. I'm like, but you've been out for, like, I just lost it. Absolutely lost it. And, basically the next day I got fired.
Wow.
And that's all over cold McDonald's. And this was my breaking point. Not cold. And that just goes to show, like, when you're on board, it could be something.
Highly.
Everybody's breaking point is somewhere else.
Yeah.
And mine, but rather than cry, I don't lose my temper. Like, I don't lose my temper. I just exploded. Yeah, basically.
I think food, it's so important. It can make or break your day. Coming down to the crew mess table to a good lunch or a good dinner can change everything in your day. Whereas if you walk down and it's awful, if you're already having a bad day, yeah, it's just, your mood's just duff.
I'm quite a chill person most of the time, but when Venom comes out, apparently I'm like, what? So yeah, apologies to those crew members, but at the end of the day, cold McDonald's is shit.
Yeah.
So why would you want to eat it?
I get that.
So you?
Me, it's funny that you said about chefs. I feel like lots of these stories are going to be about chefs. I'm not too sure why. So again, it was that first summer on board. We had a male chef, I won't say his name, quite a large man, but a nice man. And I was obviously junior stew. I did the laundry, just absolutely fine. And I remember he always wore jeans. He wore jeans and then his chef whites.
What, in the galley?
Yeah, in the galley.
Sweaty.
So he put his stuff in the laundry, and obviously, as you know, with jeans, you're meant to turn them inside out. So me being the good stew that I was, turned his jeans inside out, and I was faced with the whole crotch of the jeans. There was a shard, or like skid marks, that was about 30 centimetres long.
Disgusting.
And yeah, good couple of centimetres wide, just the whole undercarriage of the jeans. So I didn't know what to do, so I just quickly threw them in a washing machine on their own, on a hot wash, and just I hadn't been on the boat very long at this point.
Oh, that's so disgusting.
I know, because he's the one cooking our food and the guest food. And obviously, I don't know if he was also wearing underpants and they were in the, like, the bag that you put your undies in. I don't know. So anyway, I left it, just got on with things, carried on. And then about 2 weeks later, it happened again. And that by that point, I'd been on the boat a bit longer, so I felt a bit more comfortable. So I called the butler on the radio and was like, can you come down to the laundry, please? And I think he thought I was going to say that I'd, like, ruined some Hermes trousers or something and was ready to give me an absolute bollocking. And I showed him the jeans and he was just absolutely gobsmacked and horrified. And I was just like, this is the second time this has happened now. I don't know what I meant to do. And he was like, Maxie, this is not up to you. You shouldn't have to clean this. This is not acceptable.
This is not.
Fold them up, put them on his bed and put like a post-it note just to say like, I'm not cleaning these for you. And he went off and I thought about it and I just thought, I cannot put them on his trousers, like on his bed. So in the end, I just put them on the floor, like on a towel, got the Vanish spray out and I was spraying the marks on the jeans, and the stairs from the crew mess came down right by the laundry. Mm. So as I'm spraying them, the chef comes down the stairs. He looks at me, I look at him, he sees what I'm doing, he looks at me again and just walks off. Nothing was said, but it never happened again.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it never happened again after that.
See,
one.
See, it's bad if it's a crew member, but he's the chef, that makes me feel this.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, he saw that I had seen, and then it didn't happen again.
Just go to the toilet, you weirdo.
Well, wear boxers or wipe your bum. Don't fart, I don't know what it was, you know, when you're just like... But yeah, it was my first season, so, you know, when you just don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. That's us done.
That's it.
So, lovely ladies, if you're listening to this episode, I hope that gives you a bit of an insight into who we are, what we're trying to achieve, what's available, that we're, you know, we're going to try and help. We're going to do it with humour. We're going to do it with compassion.
Yeah.
And we will keep doing the best that we can.
Yeah, and we just hope that you enjoy it as much as we're enjoying making it. And yeah, any questions, please feel free. Or if you're after advice, just message us.
Yeah.
We're always here to help.
Yeah, so that's us. That's what we're about. This is our bonus episode.
First bonus.
If you want to explore what we do in a bit more detail, obviously we've got the Yacht Pearls of Wisdom website. And if you really want to get involved in the community, we have the app. We've got a wait list for members. Join the wait list and then we'll get you in, and then you can use all of the resource but also tap into the insane amounts of support that we've got in there. So yeah, come join us.
Thanking you.